Possession number 23346, Mr. Arthur Glanfield, reels 5 and 6. Left channel informant mic only, right channel interviewers mic only.
Mr. Arthur Glanfield, reel 5. We were talking about when you joined your new unit in Sussex. How did you settle in to the unit? What was the sort of early phase and training that you had?
There was no specific training of individuals because we were just making up the unit and we were finding out what our role was, what we had to do. In the course of 1943 and early 1944, we did a number of jobs which we hadn't known about, and it was really, we were really a unit, not the operations unit that would go in the first instance to Normandy, but another unit which would stand in their place in case of need, and in addition would do a number of jobs which we didn't know anything about. So that's how it was, and we tackled these jobs as they were.
Now what do you mean? Can you take us through them?
Yes. One of the jobs was dealing with smoking out areas, particularly areas where there was water. And we did it to various ports in this country, in England. And we had no idea what it was required for, but it would seem, with hindsight now, that we were required for the further operations in Europe, such as the major operation of crossing the Rhine, where it would be necessary to create a smoke screen over the area where the troops would cross in small boats. So we did this at a number of places. Some.
Can you tell? Yes. Can you give us an example of one and what exactly you did? You
know? Yes. We were in the north of England at the time, and we went to the area of Scarborough, where permission was requested from the council to do this operation early in the morning, although it was during the summer, and they objected to this, so we took it on our, or the OC took it on himself to do the operation, which started at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was over within an hour without any disruption of civilian disruption or anything, and then we moved off. We never heard any more about it.
What did you actually do?
We laid canisters, and at a certain time we ignited them. Of course, one had to take into consideration the atmospheric conditions, the direction of the wind, and so on. But we hadn't been had any operation in this before. It was purely on the spur of the moment. We were told what to do, and we were left to our own devices.
And what kind of a smoke screen was established? How successful was the smoke screen?
Yes, it was quite a dense smoke screen. It lasted really as long as the canisters kept burning, and for about a quarter of an hour afterwards, and depending on the wind, so it cleared away quite quickly afterwards.
Did you know you did that at Scarborough? Did you try it at a couple of other places?
Yes, I'm not sure. I think New Haven was another one in the south coast, and one or two other places until the CO was satisfied that we didn't need any further training in that. In any case, I believe that we were not the primary source of laying smoke. We were only a backup.
Now, other jobs. You mentioned other training tasks that you had.
During the winter of 43-44, I know we made two journeys from Heathfield to Clacton-on-Sea to give a demonstration of an operations, a mobile operations room to some general or another, I presume, in anti-aircraft or something, but we made two definite visits there with all our vehicles and equipment and set it up there as if it was operational. That was another thing we did. And generally, we had 21 vehicles and we made ourselves operational for the movement of those vehicles. In particular, I remember the leader of the convoy, who was an officer, and I was not involved with that. But the oldest lieutenant, he got that job. My job, in particular, was to do with radar was one thing, and the other thing was providing the anti-aircraft units, if necessary, with something that they required for firing their guns, and that was the direction and speed at various heights of the wind. And I went on a course in the summer to an RAF course at Reigate. About a week there, learning the theory of it, with a number of other officers, mostly RAF, and the remainder of the program was somewhere on Salisbury Plain, where it was operational, and the operational procedure was to fill balloons, small balloons, with hydrogen. We had hydrogen cylinders, and attached to the bottom of the cylinders what they called window, which was a magnetic tinsel or a metal substance which could be tracked by radar. And the job was, my job, I was trained for, was to take the readings of the radar plots and convert these on a slide rule to wind speeds and direction at various height. The idea being that if the anti-aircraft batteries were unable to get this information from the RAF for some reason or another, they could call on me to give them that information.
So you would launch some balloons in the window?
Yes, yes, and I had a 3-ton vehicle full of these cylinders of hydrogen and balloons and the equipment necessary. Whereas in point of fact, as most people know, the RAF was in command of the skies and they never failed to produce the answer that the anti-aircraft guns required.
But again, it was a belt and braces thing. You were a reserve facility.
Yes. In almost all cases, this unit was really a reserve in case the real unit, which we were exactly the replica of, failed for some reason or another. In point of fact, because there wasn't the opposition and they hadn't the problems they anticipated, we were not used for that. We were given different roles when we went overseas.
Any other roles you were trained in? The smoke, there's the wind speed.
Only the roles of the operations room, which the personnel themselves, who had some experience of that operation in the static sense. They were mostly plotters from ordinary anti-aircraft units, whereas this was a mobile unit, and we had to be able to set up the mobile unit plotting room, which consisted of a very large tent covering the operations room and all the communications which gave the plots and gave the communication.
Could you describe how you'd set up the plotting tent and the mobile room in it? I mean, that's something you practice.
Well, I wasn't involved with that, but on the other hand, it was merely a wooden construction on which the these large pieces of the plotting room were put on these trestles, I suppose, and it was already there. It just had to be assembled. But the main operation, particularly of the mobile unit, was to be able to communicate with the artillery, the anti-aircraft artillery, and the bulk of the personnel were signallers, because
you mentioned, yeah, that's
me. Yes, they were signallers, and first of all it was wireless, then by landlines, and finally by post office telephone.
So, anything else about your time? You're based at Heathfield most of the
At Heathfield, all the time, until such time we did an operation of movement up to Yorkshire, near Leeds, and we were there on the day that D-Day occurred. And we immediately left there and came down to Woking. And there we awaited our movements. But because the V1 had started bombing London, the brigadier was sent to attend a conference with other leading people, chaired by Churchill, we understand, and on return to our unit, because the brigade was all quite close to the operations room, and there the next day, I was given this map and details of where to go and set up the radar, which I had collected some months before. It was a new radar called a Type 14, which I understand was American radar. It was very heavy and was 16 foot three high. It was a large unit, and it was on a trailer towed by a Matador truck. So that was entirely my responsibility, and I was primarily concerned with that, no other officer.
How did you set it up? Where was it to be established?
It was to be established wherever it was required to give information about hostile aircraft, or in the case that I mentioned just a short time ago, for the V1. And the place I was told to go to was on the Dover side of Hastings in Sussex, at a place called Fairlight, the cliffs at Fairlight Golf Course. That's right on the end of the cliffs. So I wasted no time. The first night I got as far as the Ashdown Forest, which is more or less in a direct line to Hastings from where we were at Woking. There I did make a test to see if the radar in the evening we were there was suitable at that position, because information was always useful. The next day, of course, I got to Fairlight, sighted it about 5 metres behind the edge of the cliff, which was very high, and had slit trenches dug 2 or 3 yards behind the radar, where the personnel were to shelter and live, more or less, when they're off duty. And having sighted it and been there a day and found it working all right, no problems, I returned, and the reception there from that position was perfect. The V1s, we estimated, were being released from the area of Dieppe, and it took 30 minutes, certainly not more than half an hour to reach the coastline. And they flew, it so happens, they flew almost directly overhead. As well as being in contact with our unit by landline, by post office line rather, we also informed the local wardens at the ARP centre. And then I returned to Woking. That was my job finished for that particular thing.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, it wasn't very long after that where we moved into the mobilisation area, which was in the New Forest, not far from Southampton. And we were there quite a time, until not allowed to leave until we were instructed to do so.
Do you remember anything about the camp in the New Forest?
All I can remember, we were in tents, but beyond that, we never went out of camp. I can't remember very much about it.
We were just waiting.
Just waiting.
And this would be late June, early July?
It would be from about the second week in June, I think. And then at the end of June, at the time when the port of Cherbourg in France had been taken by the Americans, I was instructed to go with the radar and the team, which is about 15 men, to the port of Dover, port of Southampton.
Now, when you say with the radar, do you mean you went and got the Type 14 mobile unit again from Fairlight, or do you mean with another radar set?
I'm not sure whether it was the original one or whether it was a replace, another one.
Would it be another Type 14?
Oh, it was 14. It was the only type we used.
So what do you remember? You went to Southampton?
I went to Southampton and I reported to to the authorities there at the port, and uh, I was allotted a tank landing craft just for this radar, complete with the towing vehicle and myself on a motorbike. We were given all American packed rations in boxes, K pack and so on. And we waited there until it was time to move out into the channel or the sea.
And this would be the back end of June?
It would be about the back end of June. It would be within 2 days of Cherbourg being taken, I think.
I'm not quite sure of that, but they can look that up, yes.
Yeah.
And what about the embarkation and setting off?
Oh, I just drove the big vehicle on and my motorbike and camouflaged them. Waited until we were in a small convoy, and then we were off.
Anything about the crossing?
Not really. There was a calm crossing. The acting sub lieutenant was in charge of the crossing, the boat. And I did mention to him that although I knew we were due to land as soon as it was light the following dawn, or it was in the early in the morning, that under no circumstances was it to rush the job, because it was a very heavy vehicle, and I didn't want any problem with getting it off this tank landing craft, because so much depended on it, because we only had that one radar. When we landed,
what was the scene at Cherbourg when you got there?
I landed on somewhere on the coast, on Utah Beach, I understand.
Oh, so you didn't go to Cherbourg, you went to Utah?
Oh, no. Landed on Utah Beach, and the only person on the beach who was there to greet us was a coloured man, a coloured American, who looked in his book and instructed me where to report and who to report to, which was a long way away. I knew it was going to be quite a way from there to Cherbourg.
What was the scene in the area of the beach? Because it's quite, it's not early days, but was it an area of frenetic activity?
It didn't appear to be an area of any activity at all. The whole area was divided into fields, and we were allotted a field to have our early refreshment, and then we left and got on our way. The roads were very small and dusty, and I hadn't any serious problem because I was well equipped to read maps. I'd done that at school, and I got to Cherbourg about 6 hours later, I think. It would have taken all that length of time with this heavy vehicle and very poor roads. It wasn't all that far. I imagine it was something like 50 or 75 miles, but no further.
Was there any sign of the local population as you went past?
No, we saw no okay. Sign of occupation there. I was leading with the motorbike, and the truck and radar on the trailer was following.
And you had a Matador pulling again?
Yes, it was the same vehicle, yes.
So what happened when you got to Cherbourg?
We didn't actually go to Cherbourg itself. We went on the outskirts of Cherbourg, the southern outskirts, and we reached where I was told to report which was a fort called Fort Kirkaville, probably 8 miles west of Cherbourg, on the coast, of course. It was an old French fort. Didn't appear to have any equipment or anything. It was just an old French fort. A lot of concrete and granite. No accommodation. And there, I met another of the officers, but the main unit hadn't yet arrived. They had come in a big ship, evidently, and it hadn't yet arrived. They would have to go to a big port like Cherbourg or somewhere else. And so there was no... Even our equipment hadn't arrived. We hadn't any clothes, any spare clothes or anything like that. So we decided that we wouldn't sleep on the rocks there. Are we all right for time? We decided he had an American vehicle. He was a signals officer, of course. He had an American vehicle, which I think he'd borrowed over there. And we said we would go down into Cherbourg. If the Americans are there, we can find some accommodation. And that's what we did.
So what happened when you just went to sleep? So
we got to Cherbourg.
Did you leave that? I mean, did you take the radar unit with you?
Oh, no. Left the NCO in charge. I think he was a sergeant in charge. And
you set it up?
No.
No, it was just right.
No, we just guarded it, and that was all. because we had no reason for using it, no instructions. We didn't do anything without instructions. But we left it there. We told the troops that the unit would be joining them, whether it was a few hours or a day, and we would be back in the morning. So we went down. We found the biggest hotel that we could, all in charge of the Americans. We barged in and demanded a room, which we got. And we had to sleep in our underclothes, in a French bed, that is, two people to a bed. And we've spent the night there.